Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
Willie and I are about the same age, mid-50s. Never thought I'd say that, but we're here. We're here. So we have a pretty good recollection of sports going back probably to the mid-70s. I mean, I will say when I was 9, 10, 11, I don't know that I have like real vivid memories of someone like Fernando. I'm completely aware of Fernando Mania. Everyone knows his pitching motion. Everyone knows his screwball. Seeing the numbers, I did not remember that he came out of the gates with 9 starts, and I think he won 8 of 9 or all 9 and gave up like 4 runs. And every, by the way, every game was a complete game. Every freaking game. So you're a little bit older than me. How much do you remember Fernando Mania? And keep in mind, I grew up in New Jersey on the East Coast. So in LA or even here in Vegas, I'm sure it was just a monstrous story when Fernando came on the scene and Fernando Mania exploded.
Well, and if you remember Monday, we were talking about the Dodger-Yankee series and how that was about how I got wrapped up into baseball, making bets with my grandfather, right? But so that's how I remember my first watching of baseball intently, 77, 78. I think I completely was entrenched with baseball and followed it with baseball cards, getting the Topps packs with the cardboard bubblegum. But I remember Fernando when he came in and he was the rookie and it was huge. It was big. So, I mean, I do remember when Fernando Valenzuela was, you know, the whole thing when he went up to his windup and he'd look up in the air and deliver. And it was like, we used to walk around John C. Fremont Junior High School, which is now middle school, on St. Louis and Maryland Parkway. And we used to just go when he was pitching. Or if he pitched the night before, viva la viva la viva la viva Fernando Valenzuela. We would just do that if he was pitching that day. A couple of the friends of mine, Charles and Brett, I remember their names. We used to talk about Fernando Valenzuela. So I do remember him coming in. I mean, I can't sit here and pinpoint like we're going to be talking to someone that's going to be coming up. And I know he remembers. He has vivid memories. And
maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's younger than us.
He met with him, and he sends me pictures all the time.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
I didn't know he met him. I saw Russ Langer posted a picture from years ago, getting a chance to do a little bit of minor league baseball action with Fernando. But, you know, folks of that era, it was a massive story. Keep in mind, baseball was also much bigger in the American psyche than it is now. It's still big. And Yankees Dodgers will be big. Can I mention something real quick?
Well,
I went on my little rant. I'm going to try not to do it too often, but about Goliath meeting Goliath, Yankees Dodgers. Oh, some of the baseball fans. Oh, it's all about money. They haven't played each other in 43 years. Fernando's year, his rookie year. So the money can put you in a position, but if you botch it, then you don't make the World Series. These two programs, organizations don't face each other. From a competitive balance standpoint, the NFL is much worse than Major League Baseball. But because its owners aren't morons like most baseball owners were in the 80s and 90s where they denigrated the players and tried to play the fans against the players and now have it planted in people's heads that baseball is not competitively balanced, so people just keep thinking that. The NFL owners, they are dumb in lots of ways, but they rarely, except for Jerry Jones, will badmouth their players and the money they make, right? And they don't complain about being little guy versus big guy. They have better revenue sharing than baseball does, but baseball is pretty close to what the NFL does. The Chiefs getting DeAndre Hopkins today has to be so friggin' deflating for so many football fans. They're going to win again. They're going to win again. You know that since, listen, in the NFL, if you don't have a quarterback, like a top 15 guy, in the last 30-plus years, there's like 4 examples of a non-elite guy being able to win a Super Bowl. You have to have one of those guys. Baseball, since the World Series of 81, Willie, has had 22 different organizations win a World Series. 22! When I counted it up, I was like, what? Can the NFL claim that? No, because most eras, there are some dominant teams. They win multiple championships, and it's because they have great quarterbacks.
Because they have great quarterbacks, not because they picked up a receiver in week 7 or 8.
Okay, so am I overstating the impact that DeAndre Hopkins could have?
I think so. I do. I think so. Now, I will say this. I still have big concerns of the Baltimore Ravens' defense since week one. Let's not forget that this team lost to the Las Vegas Raiders. So until I see this defense turn around, but I think the Ravens are a legitimate threat to the Chiefs this season.
Okay, let's bring in Paul Gutierrez from ESPN.com. Paul's a Southern California guy. We'll get to the Fernando stuff in a couple minutes. Paul, I wanted to come in here today and rant and rave and DeAndre Hopkins and Rich Get Richer, and here we go, another Chiefs title. Am I overstating the potential impact of a DeAndre Hopkins going to KC?
Well, you're forgetting that the Raiders added Desmond Ritter. I mean, what are we talking about here? You know, they went out and got themselves another quarterback, and no. It is what it is. It reminds me a lot of, you know, when the Yankees would need a player, they just go get him. When the A's in the 80s and early 90s, when they were the top dogs, they just go get somebody. But it's not like it's a surprise, right? I mean, the Chiefs have, everybody has known the Chiefs needed another receiver for the past 2 or 3 weeks anyway, so to be able to go and get them, and they got him for less than what the Jets gave the Raiders for Devontae Adams. So it's not a surprise. I think the surprise will be if he's not contributing to that offense right away. And, you know, we just kind of see what happens because, you know, for what it's worth, it's a totally different team, obviously, but the Raiders are still the most recent team to beat the Chiefs, and that was back on Christmas.
I want to get back to the AFC West. I want to get to this game in a couple of minutes. Again, Paul Gutierrez is here with Willie and Cofield on Wednesday. We wanted your perspective. You're a true Southern California guy. Your perspective on the passing of Fernando. Willie and I are of the age group. We remember Fernando Mania. I'm sure for you it's more vivid.
Yeah, and I actually developed a very professional relationship with Fernando over the years. And it's interesting because it comes back to when Fernando Jr. played baseball at UNLV. I was working at the LA Times, and I came to do a story on Fernando Jr. when he was playing here. And he was the Mountain West Player of the Year, playing first base, and he was like the spitting image of his dad, but he hit, and Fernando Sr. could hit as well, but he was the first baseman. He wasn't a pitcher. And I saw Fernando Sr. sitting up in the stands, and to me, that was my childhood idol. You know, when I was a little kid, Steve Garvey was the guy, and then all of a sudden, there was somebody that kind of looked like an uncle who didn't look like he belonged and yet was dominating the league as a rookie, and I'm 11 years old at the height of Fernando Mania in 1981, and I went up there, I sat with him, I introduced myself to him, and it was like everything kind of came full circle for me at that moment. I'm watching baseball, which was at that time, you know, my number one sport, at my alma mater, working for the LA Times, which is where I wanted to work at the time, talking baseball with my idol, Fernando, at my alma mater. And it all, that was just kind of what it meant. Through the years, I've written many, many stories on the impact of Fernando Mania, what it's meant. There has, in my opinion, you know, there's no player that changed the face of baseball and its fans more than him in terms of bringing Latinos in general, Mexicans and Mexican-Americans in particular out of the shadows to come to Dodger Stadium. And, you know, it's just ironic that in the years of knowing him and talking with him, we talked about potentially doing a project together. You know, I went and saw him when he was on the radio broadcast for the Spanish side in San Francisco a year and a half ago, and we talked, and we talked about some potential things here, and you know, obviously he got sick, so just kind of left him alone. And you know, today's a really sad day for a lot of people, and myself included on a personal level. Just, you know, a lot of people have reached out, and it's just sad. Just a sad day. But he lived a full life as well.
You you are somebody that, since you've sort of grown your career, right, you have always gave back to your heritage in terms of the articles that you've written and making sure that certain individuals, whether it's been within the Raiders organizations or sports figures themselves, you know, have gotten their just due and written their stories and told them. And I was going to, you sort of already answered the question. I was going to ask you, you know, as Jackie Robb did, you know, for Black Americans, what Fernando Valenzuela did for as a Mexican-born pitcher. So you sort of answered that, but not only for baseball players, but just, as you said, for sports journalists, people that maybe, you know, were starting out their career. And he just seemed like he was such a phenomenon for life itself, from what I remember. And I was telling Steve, I mean, we used to go to Fremont Junior High School. We were talking about him. I mean, he had everybody talking, more so than just what he brought to the baseball diamond. What do you remember, and what did you come to learn that he brought to just society for, you know, his heritage?
Well, he transcended race. He transcended the game. Anybody, and he's one of those few people where you say just the name, You know who you're talking about. You don't have to say the full name. You say Fernando? Yeah. Oh, we're talking about Fernando Valenzuela, the lefty who had a screwball, who looked up to the heavens when he was throwing the ball. You say Bo. You're talking Bo Jackson. You say, Marcus. You're talking Marcus Allen. He was one of those singular name, lack of a better term, characters in sportsdom that you knew exactly who you were talking about. And it goes much deeper than that for Fernando when it comes to L.A., because where Dodger Stadium was built, a lot of Mexican and Mexican-American families were evicted from that area. There was a lot of other things that went into it, but they were evicted from that area, and a lot of them preferred not to go back to that area to watch the Dodgers because they basically felt like they were kicked out so that they could build this baseball palace in 1962. My dad had an uncle who lived in that area and was forced out and relocated to Lincoln Heights, which from his front yard, you could see the lights of Dodger Stadium. But when Fernando came, then there was a pride that made it okay to go back there and made it a place of, as Jaime Harin, the Hall of Fame Spanish language broadcaster who served as Fernando's translator in those early years, he said it was almost like a pilgrimage, like the Virgin Mary for a lot of Mexican Catholics. They would make that pilgrimage to go to church to see her or to pay respects to her. It was the same thing whenever Fernando was pitching. And that's the one regret in my career. I never saw him pitch live. My dad and my brother did. Many family members saw him pitch live. And I would just, though, I was very, I guess blessed is the right word here, and lucky and fortunate to have developed a professional relationship with him over the years. And none of that stuff ever stuck to him, because I would bring it up if it meant something more to him. And he's like, yeah, if it helps somebody. And I posted a couple of my stories today that I've written over the years. And, if it helps somebody find inspiration, great. If not, fine. But that was just him. He was very low-key, very mellow, and just, I think the best way to put it, as my wife told me, just a very, very nice man.
Paul Gutierrez, ESPN. Some of us know him as PG. Some of us know him as El Diablo. But that's a whole other story. Let's talk about the Raiders locker room. Paul Gutierrez.
What's that?
I saw that you wrote, Antonio Pierce admits Raiders not a good team. Did he finally admit that, like 1 week after I asked him at the post-game press conference, is this a good team right now?
He brought it up on Monday on his own as the backside to saying we're not tanking. And that's the big word, right, that coaches and people in sports, you never really admit, let alone bring up on your own. But the fact that he brought it up on his own to say that this team is not tanking, they're not trying to do something for the future, because who knows what the future holds for anybody here, right? Yeah, going back to the Dodgers, as Vin Scully would say, aren't we all just day-to-day anyway? So when he brings that up and says we're not a good team, we're not tanking, he's acknowledging things. And today he said he was asked about, just trying to not lose to the Chiefs. He said, we're tired of losing the past 3 weeks. We got to get this taste out of our mouth. So there's going to be a little something extra. There's always something big between Raiders and Chiefs during that week. And, it's going to get physical. It's going to get ugly. And the Chiefs are going to want something to prove, like I mentioned at the top of this, because they are the last team to have beaten them. And, don't forget, there's still the unfortunate situation that happened in training camp when a rookie, Trey Taylor, got caught on video, and it wasn't his fault. They gave him the Kermit Muppet that was dressed up to look like Patrick Mahomes. So, guys like Mahomes, the Michael Jordans, those guys, the Tom Bradys, they need to manufacture something to get themselves going. And that's something that I think is going to be a little bit of manufactured outrage as well come Sunday.
Griffin, hop on the mic. Come on, give me some Patrick Mahomes. Give me some Kermit.
I'm here.
It's not very good today.
What's wrong with your voice? What's going on here?
You're trying to sound like a frog. That's the problem with
my voice. I'm here. Oh, Kermit the Frog.
That's really good.
That's good.
Really good. All right. Paul, I've been hitting an angle, and I wonder if anyone has asked around Raiders media availability about Patrick Mahomes and this sideline nonsense. Last week, he popped off a 33-yard run because they were afraid to tackle him. He often gets away with this. The other thing that drives me nuts is the arm reach out for the first down. There's got to be a defense out there that is going to break him in half when he does that on the sideline, but especially his arm. I would slug the frig out of his arm, and I think Max Crosby is the guy to do it. And I think Max Crosby is the guy to also tell Mahomes during the game, I'm going to do it.
Yes.
Well, I think, here's the thing, I don't know if you're going to have anybody actually put their name to it, but yeah, I remember seeing that. And back in the day when Colin Kaepernick was running the zone read, I remember asking Reggie McKenzie, who was then the Raiders defensive coordinator, general manager, who was a linebacker when he played, why isn't a linebacker simply sticking their helmet in his chin to make him not do that? It's kind of the same thing. If he's running down the sideline, why isn't somebody just taking that 15-yard penalty at that point? And I don't know, maybe because there's some protection issues going on that the league might kick the guy out of the league or something, but that's what it's going to take. And I'm not advocating violence here or cheap shots or anything. But, yeah, I you know, when he's been running down the sidelines or when he's bowling over a smaller DB in the end zone after he's already crossed, it's just kind of like, what is going to take? What's it going to take for that to stop? And it's going to take somebody taking a shot at him and going ahead and taking that 15-yard penalty. And there'll be a fight and everything else will break out, but that's what it's going to take to stop. Now, nobody's going to put their name on that and say that's what's going to happen, but in kind of talking to guys around the league and figuring out exactly what needs to happen, that's what needs to happen. Again, not advocating it, not saying it's going to happen, but that's what would put a quick stop to it, in my opinion.
Well, on the arm reach out to get a first down, his arm's in play. I mean, how would you throw a flag on that? He's getting first downs doing that. Smash it.
Derek Carr, you should do the same thing too, right? And it would drive people crazy, especially in this building when he would do it. And I don't know if it would drive him crazy because it looked funny or if it because he was putting himself in harm's way. But, yeah, it's just a very strange look, especially when – It kind of goes back to like when Pickett did the fake slide, right, and took off for another 20, 30 yards. It's like, dude, you faked that you were giving yourself up. Okay, great, but you're already protected enough by the rules. That's just kind of bad form. But, again, it's the National Football League, so, you know, what's bad form?
What's the latest on the wide receiver room for the Raiders?
Jacoby Myers practiced limited today, but watched him, kept an eye on him, and he was moving around pretty good on that ankle. And after missing two games, he should be rested up and good to go. I talked to him last week, and he thought he might be able to go last week, but he didn't practice at all, so he was down. You know, it's going to be interesting. I'm not saying Desmond Ridder is going to play anytime soon, but he already has that built-in connection with Trey Tucker. So, you go from the potential Derek Carr, Davante Adams connection to Desmond Ridder and Trey Tucker connection from Cincinnati. There you go. Now you're cooking with gas. I kid. I joke.
Is the bright spot so far from this, if there is one to take, Brock Bowers?
I wrote that today. I mean, he's been a silver lining in this black cloud of a season. And, I was talking with him off to the side today. I was like, hey, you do kind of realize what you're doing here, you know, and it's stuff that hasn't been seen in a generation, at least in terms of the production of catching the ball. But I'm also of the mind, and this is where I always have a hard time, and Jerry Rice has nothing to do with this, but I have a hard time calling Jerry Rice the greatest player of all time because it takes somebody getting him the ball. It takes an offensive line giving that quarterback time to get him the ball. So what Brock Bowers is doing is very unique, no doubt, but still, they got to throw him the ball. And with the other receivers being down and losing Davante Adams via trade, who else are they going to throw the ball to? Well, he's been more than advertised and better than advertised. And I remember I was one of the few, one of the first really to throw up an eyebrow when they drafted him 13th overall, thinking that's not a position of need. They already signed Harrison Bryant. They still had Michael Mayer. Nobody knew that he was going to be gone for a while. And yet, here he is. I mean, he's just a solid all-around pro that just looks like he's just only going to continue to get better.
Paul, I don't know if you're going to see the UNLV game as a fan or media. We were just having a discussion about 15 minutes ago about attendance, which has been it's trending up. I'll say they're probably up about 20% in terms of UNLV fans in the building. The bonus in this game against Boise might be a negative, but in terms of the crowd size, Boise is going to have at least 6,000 in the building. Talking to some Boise radio people earlier, they were saying they're hoping for 10,000 down here in Vegas. Our discussion was about how does UNLV start getting consistently 30,000 to 35,000 Las Vegans in the building for UNLV football, which right now is playing a really good brand of football.
Yeah, I would have to say you got to keep doing it. You got to keep winning. Yeah. And I heard Willie speaking earlier, this team always supports winners, you know. And if they continue to win and if they get ranked again for the second time in school history, that's going to, you know, they're competing. But here's the difference, too, is they're now competing for that sports entertainment dollar. Yeah, the Aces are done, but the Raiders are still playing. The Golden Knights are, you know, just starting their season out. So they've got to carve out their own niche. And as it was back in the day, those that were bankrolling Gucci Row for basketball or being the big donors, they're all either aged out or no longer with us. So they've got to find a new supply, so to speak, of getting it going. And the best way to do that is to create the excitement that people want to come. And I will say this, I do know that there's a handful of people, my own family included, that really want to come to UNLV games because they love going to Raider games as well, but this is a much better, it's more economical to go here and sit in the club level seats and to go down into the bar for a UNLV game than it is for a Raider game. They still get to enjoy all the excuse my French, the accoutrement, so to speak, but they get to see, you know, college football instead of the Raiders, but they get to take advantage of everything that goes along there with the club seating and everything. So that's the way they're going to do it, is just by continuing to win and doing it in an exciting fashion. As an alum, I'm just trying to figure out, why would you schedule Boise State for homecoming? Isn't that supposed to be where you get, like, you know, like the Southern Utah Tech or whoever to come in, because you want to guarantee that win? But it is going to be a good game. I'm really excited, both as a professional journalist, but maybe even more so as an alum.
Paul, last one for you. We had Caleb Herring on earlier, and I want to piggyback off of Steve's Pat Mahomes reach out, who's going to smash that arm. And speaking with Caleb Herring, we were talking about the buffet at Allegiant Stadium and the rules and etiquette of people cutting in front.
Line cutters!
Do you think that we should start breaking arms and sacking people that cut the line when we're trying to get our food? Yep. Especially, I notice it from Allegiant workers or game day people, not media members, but they cut in. Should we kind of have the same philosophy that we have for Pat Mahomes' arm?
I have yet to have anybody try to cut in front of me. Maybe that's a respect thing that they don't afford to guys like you, Willie. I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I mean, it's just, I've never seen that. I've seen people just kind of standing in line. I mean, to me, one of the nastiest things I've ever seen in a buffet line is somebody just grabbing food with their bare hands. But I haven't seen that, but I'm all for it. Or, you know, the accidental oops, dropping the drink on them, maybe. That could stop it. You know, again, not advocating it. Like, I'm not advocating violence against
Patrick
Mahomes. What
about
Patrick Mahomes?
Strike to the jugular.
But,
it's kind of serious.
Yeah. Really. Well, either way, I mean, the new season of Cobra Kai is coming up next month, so we're good to go.
Yes. All right, good.
All right, Paul, we appreciate it. Thanks, you buddy.
All right, guys, take care.
If I speak English, thank you, buddy. There he is.
You'll be
really, you're going to give a throat shot to someone cutting the line?
No, Paul will. He's martial arts.
You don't have to name a name. I cannot remember the reaching into the food and describing it. Was that pasta?
No, it was...
Or was that someone else?
The thing that you're talking about that Adam and I witnessed with Ed Grady was at the Golden Knights, and it was a former coach, one of the coaches, and I believe it was either a pretzel or something, and it was and he thought it was mustard, but it was cheese. It was one or the other.
It was a hot dog. He had a hot dog in his hand, and he dipped the hot dog in what he thought was mustard, which is weird anyway.
Right, because it was an entire chafing dish, but it was cheese for the pretzel.
But there's 100% certain, sometimes my memory fails me, and I will embellish, 100% certain there was another media function where someone was reaching into a chafing dish and scooping out pasta with their hand.
Ooh.
That's aggressive.
Get out of
here. I'm not even are you doing that at home? You have a tray of baked ziti? You didn't eat like
no,
an animal?
Absolutely.
You
not.
Slam your face into it?
That's unheard of.
Put it on a plate. Grab a utensil.
Forget about it.
Mr. L.A., Mr. Vegas, Arash Markazi joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Arash coming up in a couple minutes. Let's give away some more tickets to a great show downtown, DLVEC. Three sets of tickets. One pair each. Caller 6, 7, and 8. 364, 1100. Legendary hip-hop, 80s, 90s, and beyond. Cypress Hill, DLVEC.com is where you get the tickets. That's the downtown Las Vegas Event Center. The show's this Saturday. I've talked to a lot of people who are really fired up about that show. So we got multiple sets of tickets. Griffin's going to hook you up. Caller 678-364-1100, 364-1100. Boy, I'm really hoping that when Arash pops on with us, that he will be the one voice of reason in a cacophony of LeBron, I won't say haters, dislikers. No one is buying the celebratory mood of the Bronny LeBron playing together last night.
What are you talking about? You're fabricating and embellishing. If you're talking about the people that you've talked to, Caleb, myself, and Justin.
Yes, today.
Okay.
On the show.
You said nobody. I didn't say that there wasn't. I even gave you an example where I said I understand the celebratory moment.
Okay.
What I said was the one thing it lacked. It's good for him
authenticity.
Because is authenticity in terms of the fact that he's not an NBA caliber player. It's not as if it was Ken Griffey Jr. when he was playing with his father. This is a totally different. That kid is not going to finish the season on that roster. He's going to the G League, and it's not a bad thing, but it's where he should be. Because Steve, you're telling me that this dude should be in the rotation and should be getting minutes? Come on now. That's all I said. As far as authenticity, they got JJ Redick got it done on opening night out of the way for the home crowd. So, but it lacked the authenticity because it doesn't have the same feel because he's not an NBA caliber player. But I did say I understood where LeBron's coming from, the proud moment of a father. You're just upset because Caleb said he didn't shed a tear and Justin said he didn't get all emotional. That's what you were looking for.
I was looking for a little bit of support. You're right. I wanted a dad to come in with some grand story. I'm not a dad.
I compared it with an analogy to my proud moment.
You did.
Okay.
All right, quick time out here. We're going to bring up Arash Markazi on the other side. It's Cofield and Company. We're heading towards the Barry Odom Radio Show at Parkway Tavern, 215. And Flamingo, $2 beers, Miller Lite beers, $2 beers during the show. Of course, it's Matt Neverett, Caleb Herring, and the coach, Barry Odom, as we get ready for one of the biggest games in the history of UNLV football at home, potentially a chance to control your destiny and make the college football playoff. We'll come back with Arash, and then also some good audio that I grabbed this week about local kicking hero. Oh. Let's hope that continues. Caden Chittenden.
Okay.
Mr. LA, Mr. Vegas, Arash Markazi joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So nice we play it twice. Let's do it. Willie, Cofield, Battleborn Injury Lawyers, Battleborn Broadcast Center, 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Good to see as Arash comes in. Arash, just so you know, Willie now does two shows. In one, because while he does this show, he's also on TikTok. And
I just started it.
He has a TikTok show going as he's talking to us. Here's the great thing, Arash. And by the way, how are you? Here's the great thing. He doesn't tell me that it's going on during breaks. And during breaks, I'm not very filtered.
I just started it.
Oh, there we go.
Yes. So make sure you follow Willie, because there's actually probably a good amount of material where someone is going to stab me or I'm going to get fired. But first of all, Arash. I didn't get to see all the pictures. I don't know why you didn't send them to me, but congrats. Congrats on the big day. You look lovely. I think I saw a reception picture. You were dancing. That was great.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, like we couldn't control the weather. The weather was great. The weather cooperated. You know, it was in October, as you know, in sports, guys, the craziest month of the year. But listen, now we, you know, look forward to the World Series, and we're going to wait till July to go on the honeymoon.
Do you feel different? Do you feel trapped? Do you feel next level good? Like, what does this married thing feel like?
It feels fantastic. It feels amazing. Biggest, I guess, difference is the ring. I don't wear any, you know, jewelry or rings or watches. I'm not like my dear friend Willie, so I have to get used to having a ring. But I have gotten used to it, and it feels fantastic.
You said you're waiting till July, my friend, to go on a honeymoon, but with all the places that you two have gone this year, I sort of feel like, I mean, that if I went on to some of the places that you've been this year, that would feel like a honeymoon.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've joked about that. Our life is sort of like this honeymoon, as cheesy as that sounds. So, yeah, listen, we've been to Hawaii. We call Vegas home as well. So, yes, but we will have an official honeymoon in July.
That's good. By the way, I love that description. I'm going to sound really mean here, but it was a moment where I was blunt. I was talking to the SO the other day, and I'm like, hey, just so you know, I got this Hawaii trip coming up with UNLV football, and she's like, wow, that'd be a good trip to go on. And I'm like, yeah, you know, they're going to travel there a lot down the road. Basically, it was like, no. It's on short notice. What, I mean, come on. I don't make Arash money. How much is a flight right now to Hawaii, round trip on 2 weeks' notice?
Hawaii is a little bit like Vegas. I mean, depending on their deals with okay. the city and the tourism, but it's actually not as bad as you might think.
All right. Well, I'm going to take off the middle of next week and get ready, and we'll do that, so. But again, serious, congrats, Arash, on getting married. I don't know if people knew what the hell we were talking about with all that. I figured they could figure it out. What's going on in L.A. right now is crazy. you know, the Lakers opening up. I absolutely want to get into that. What does it feel like in LA for the Dodgers with a, you know, a good amount of time to amp things up? And we got to remind people, if you're not from LA, and we have a lot of transplants here, the Dodgers are what? Who's won? Is it the Dodgers or the Lakers? Dodgers are gigantic, and we were just talking to Paul Gutierrez about Fernando, and then also the Dodgers go across all these different ethnicities. They're massive.
It's 1 and 1A, and it's not really a cop-out because it really depends on what time of the year it is and who's doing what. This time of the year, if the Dodgers are in the playoffs, certainly if the Dodgers are in the World Series, there is no more popular team in Los Angeles than the Dodgers. I mean, I've often said this, you know, with the number of professional and collegiate teams that we have in Los Angeles, I mean, it is the Dodgers and the Lakers, and there is a massive gap. You know, number three might be USC if they're, you know, like a top five team, like in contention. But there is sort of a battle for that number three team. But there is a gap. There is a massive gap between those top two teams.
I think the job that Dave Roberts has done in the playoffs has been masterful. It's, you know, it's easy to say, oh, just use your bullpen a lot when you don't have a lot of starting pitching. But he's done it. He's mixed it the right way. And the bullpen came through in a big way.
Well, so that's the thing. I think there was a lot of talk in Los Angeles that if the Dodgers had lost for the third straight time in the division series against a division opponent, was Dave Roberts going to go? And I would have said yes if they were healthy. But to your point, Steve, I mean, he had to win a bullpen game to extend their season. You know, game four, Steve, and I was at that game effectively in 2022, where the Padres completed the backdoor sweep and they won three straight and they beat the Dodgers. The Dodgers not only won that game four, they go on to win game five, close out that series, and they go on to win in the championship series. So I'm not saying that this season is a success if they don't win the World Series, because when you get this far, obviously you want to win it, you have home field advantage. But this is not a healthy team. And again, they will be pitching one, perhaps two bullpen games if this series goes six or seven, which is crazy in the World Series.
One of the hardest, most expensive tickets to get in LA history?
Yes, certainly. You know, when you talk about the number of seats and the ticket, right? So this is not Crypto.com Arena when you have less than 19,000 seats. The Dodgers stadium is over 50,000 seats, guys, and the ticket is over $1,000. That is field, like top deck, not a great seat. But again, that's just to get your foot in the door. And then you go higher, you know, if you want to sit behind home plate and things like that.
I'm guessing there's only maybe a few dozen media people who get to actually sit in the press box, or the rest in auxiliary seats. And are you one of the gifted folks, or are you sitting with the fans?
No, listen, I'll be in the auxiliary box. Once we get to a Dodgers-Yankees World Series, and the Dodgers Stadium press box is great. It is right behind home plate. It's one of the last really, truly great press boxes in professional sports because of that. A lot of other press boxes, they've made those tweets, and they've, you know, put the press all the way to the left or the right field up the pole. But I don't mind being in the aux box this time of year because it is you know, I like being amongst the fans. I like hearing, you know, a big play and a home run and things like that. And again, during the course of the game, I'll like to walk around. So again, I will walk into the press box in between, like, minutes,
sure,
but will not be there for the entirety of the game.
For Shohei, we talked a lot during the season in the clubhouse. It was crazy. You know, you're talking 100-plus Japanese media members. It got really crowded. What have they done during the postseason, and do they change it where he doesn't he have to be in a big room as a press conference setting? Like, they don't do that in the clubhouse during the World Series, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, they do make the clubhouse available. You know, the World Series and the postseason is when you have to go and get a special pin to get clubhouse access, and then there's a whole song and dance you have to do to get one of those pins. But yeah, Shohei Ohtani, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, when they speak to the media, it'll generally this time of year, certainly in the postseason, will be in the press conference room. I think we talked after the first game of the season, and the Dodgers at that point, I don't know whether they didn't know what was happening, but the amount of media for the first game of the season gave them a clue. I mean, it was World Series-like for game one of the season.
What last one, and this is kind of on the jokey front. Arash Markazi is with the CEO of the Sporting Tribune. I don't think, did you ever do a feature on the sushi stand? Has it blown up? Has it been a failure? Or will they just simply sell out because they may get a lot of Japanese fans in for, you know, worldwide? This is a massive story with the Yankees and Dodgers. Come on, let's get that sushi place going.
It's a great question. I think you wanted me to bring it up to actually show Shohei Ohtani.
Yes,
That hasn't happened. But I did take a picture of the menu. I did take a picture of the sushi. But that's the extent of our coverage of that. So maybe I probably dropped the ball there.
You did drop the ball.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't know if I want to do another reintro for the Sporting Tribune, but I will. Arash is with the Sporting Tribune. Arash is with the Sporting Tribune. He's newly married. Willie's here. I'm sorry, Willie. I did like 9 questions in a row. I'm very fired up.
Well, I'm just looking down the list of stuff that the topics that you have here, and one of the things that's really intriguing is you have here, where will Arash be on Friday? Because Friday night in L.A., I mean, you have an array of topics here. Game 1 of the World Series, Lakers Suns at Crypto, USC Rutgers at the Coliseum, a concert at the Intuit Dome, Roosevelt Garfield at SoFi, St. John Bosco modern day at Santa Ana is very intriguing. But here's the big thing. You mentioned about the Yankees and the Dodgers. You asked, what's bigger, Dodgers or Lakers? But right now, in the Southwest, meaning Nevada and California, the highest-ranked team in college football is UNLV, your second home, 1-1A. You own property here in Vegas. Will you be coming to the most important game in UNLV Boise State or in UNLV pro football history when they host Boise State?
Listen, under normal circumstances, I would be in UNLV for that game. But it's going up against Dodgers-Yankees game 1 of the World Series. So, listen, I think everything realistically takes a backseat to that. Certainly the Dodgers, again, if the Dodgers were just in the World Series against Cleveland, it would be number one. But Dodgers-Yankees World Series, that is a very big deal. You got two local kids on the mound, Jack Flaherty, Harvard, Westlake, Steve Cofield is very familiar with that.
Yes.
Garrett Cole, you got USC, UCLA also with the two managers with Boone and Roberts. So just a lot of local angles there too. But Willie, you're 100% right. We'll have that game covered at the Sporting Tribune, but I will not be in Las Vegas for that game.
I thought about you last night because there were two wrestlers, and I can't remember their name now, but the marketing ploys have begun for WrestleMania. And it was, I can't remember the guy's name. Long-haired cat with a mullet and then a girl. I think they're a couple, Liv or Lav or
Mysterio.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay,
Mysterio.
Yeah,
yeah, Mysterio. And yeah, they cranked the siren. But all I picture every time I see a WrestleMania logo is that picture that I've seen for 8 years in a row now. Every time there's a WrestleMania, wherever it's at, Arash posts the same picture in the front row, yelling and screaming, exuberant as a young man at the WrestleMania. It's fantastic.
Yeah, listen, I mean, that was the first WrestleMania in Las Vegas back there, at Caesar's Palace, where so many great fights were back in the day. And so, yeah, this would be the first WrestleMania back in Las Vegas since then. So you're darn right. You're going to see that picture a couple times during this lead-up to WrestleMania.
Right. Right.
I will be posting that several times, yes.
Arash, time is short, but I do want to get what the vibe was last night when Bronny got to play with LeBron in a lineup for the Lakers at, I'll call it Staples. I watched some of the highlights, and all day long, most of the hosts and guests on the show have been like, it was kind of a manufactured moment. Did you feel it from the crowd, or was it kind of a hushed tone?
No, listen, the crowd was feeling it because if you bought a ticket to that game, that's what you were there for. You were there for that moment. I'm happy that they made it work in the first half, second quarter. The Lakers are up by 16 points at that point. I'm glad. Again, was it manufactured? Of course. They thought about how they wanted this to happen. LeBron, Bronny on the sidelines. Both of them walk to the scorer's table. Both of them take their warm-up jackets off. Bron tried to give Bronny an assist. Listen, and then that was that. I mean, in a weird way, that was the best part of that moment. They didn't try to, like, go back to the well and say, all right, well, we're going to continue calling for, like, LeBron to get Bronny with a lob. Like, no. He was on the court for 2 minutes in 40 seconds. He put up 2 shots. He missed both, and that was it. Like, they gave him that moment. I don't know if we're going to see that again. But I do know that come November 9th, when the South Bay Lakers G League season starts, Bronny will be on that team, and we could all move on. I mean, I think most of us have already moved on, but certainly when Bronny's not a part of the team, I think we could all kind of move past it at that point. But it was kind of a – I don't want to say it wasn't a story, but it wasn't as big a story as people are making it out to be. Again, the kid was on the court for 2 minutes and 40 seconds. That was it.
Arash, have fun at the World Series. We'll talk to you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Back here on this Wednesday, we're headed towards the Barry Odom radio show. Griffin, is Caden Chittenden? I want to load that up. I think this is a really fascinating story. UNLV has had a lot of success in football the last couple of years. A big part of it has been the kicker. Jose Pisano last year was an amazing story. They got this freshman out of Faith Lutheran, and Caden Chittenden to this point has been excellent. After the game, I talked to, well, someone asked a question to Coach Odom at the press conference on Monday. We asked about him again. Listen to what he says here about Chittenden and his growth.
He keeps growing, shows great maturity. You know, the last game in Logan, he cramped up. And I know we were kicking off a lot, but he cramped. And, you know, that was really the only setback that he's had. He's been very stoic in his nature. His practice habits have improved greatly. I think he's gotten a lot stronger from when we started in spring ball to where he is now. So you see some of his kickoffs. You know, we've got opportunities now for touchbacks. That wasn't the case in March. So he's put in a lot of work. And then the snap, the hold, the protection on the extra point and the field goal, they've been really solid. And I think he has trust in that. So the timing on him staying in the flow on the kicks, he knows he can count on that. So I think it goes together, but what weapon he's become for us, and he's going to need to have great kicks down the stretch here.
You mentioned after the game you're pleased with Chittenden banging the ball into the end zone. How do you get stronger as a kicker? I mean, is it through lifting? Is it technique that he's getting better?
I think lifting, flexibility, the motion of doing that over and over and over, the repetitiveness of it. There's things that Coach Fish has been able to manipulate a little bit with leg swing in the weight room. And then maturity, getting a little bit older. I think all those things have combined to it. But he's really come on here in the last couple weeks, and to the point early in the year, we were saying, hey, let's get, you know, in the, not that I was ever concerned about his distance in field goal range, but just from a confidence standpoint. Now, we really don't even discuss once we get inside, you know, 38-yard line or so, we feel pretty good about him stepping in and knocking it home. So, you know, I think we've put him in positions enough in practice that we all have trust in him. He's got trust in himself, and he's confident and continues to make big plays for us.
He kicked high balls into the end zone. He kicked screamers into the end zone. He kicked one towards the pylon, got it into the end zone.
And we lucked out on that one.
Okay, so yeah. Does he have free reign to kick the way he wants?
Man, kick it in. I would rather it be like row 5 where there's no the worm burner that went out barely in the side of the end zone. We were lucky on that one because that was a crucial part of the game. And, you know, had they got the ball kicked out of bounds, that would have hurt us a little bit. But he's doing a great job.
There he is, Barry Odom on his freshman kicker, Caden Chittenden. It is really important in every college football program that they have a good kicker. I'll give you a good example. Down at Arizona State, Kenny Dillingham, after the game, last week's game, was like, our kickers stink. We're going to have open tryouts. And then the next day, he's like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to attack individuals or college kids, but I mean, it's a make or break situation, and this was a big land for them to get Chittenden, and he's been awesome. Later in the week, we'll put out an interview that Matt Nevert, actually, you'll probably hear some of it tonight on the Barry Odom radio show. Really interesting kid. I find kickers fascinating. I don't want to go near them. I don't want to look at them. I don't, like, during the game, I don't. I was asking Haj Malik Williams about him, and he's like, I talked to him. I took him under my wing. I was like, okay, I haven't heard that much. Most people are like, let them do what they have to do.
Well,
don't get in their way.
I got news for you.
Don't screw up the routine.
How long have I been doing this now? Outside the year I took up, about three years?
Years, yeah. Feels like 50.
I'm getting fed up.
With what?
Gonna start doing tryouts for main host, lead host.
Is that right? Well, today was it was a hell of a show behind the scenes. Griffin, great job holding it together. I was going crazy. Up next, Barry Odom Radio Show. Get over there live. Parkway Tavern, 215 and Flamingo. We'll see you.